Good morning.
So I think that maybe this week and last week more than weeks in recent memory, bad news seems to be all around us a little bit extra. We're about to seemingly go to not war with Syria. Forest fires for the last few weeks have basically turned Yosemite into ash, which is too bad because it was really pretty. And then it seems like recently media just continues to march away from what looks like values and morals and more towards what looks like the opposite of that. But then even more generally speaking, our friends get sick, our family gets sick. My generation's grandparents are in the midst of just passing away. My dad's generation's parents are passing away. And even smaller than that, even little things, people don't do things that we want them to do, or they don't do things that we like them to do. I have a couple friends who had two daughters, and their daughters could very charitably be called precocious. And they were struggling with some of the parenting things around their two daughters, and in the midst of that, they were also struggling financially pretty deeply, and every single month they were having to get loans and donations from family members just to be able to make ends meet. And then, one midweek at church, they announced that they were pregnant again. And the response from the church was frustration and sadness and, what were you thinking? And, you know, I don't know if I have any more time to give. I am already helping you as much as I can. I don't know if I can help you anymore. And as they were having conversations, seeing people from across the room just pursing their lips and shaking their heads. We hate getting bad news. We hate when people do things that we don't like. And so a lot of our lives are spent trying to avoid bad news, avoid bad things happening, or protect ourselves and shield ourselves against bad things happening. But if we're all honest, dealing with pain and disappointment is a pretty daily occurrence for us on the earth that we live on. So with that said, I want us today to just read Psalm 91. I'm going to make a couple points about it, and then we're going to go. Psalm 91, the 91st Psalm, if you prefer. We don't know who wrote Psalm 91, so just imagine that you're writing it. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. For he will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and buckler. You will not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in darkness, nor the destruction that wastes at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you. You'll only look with your eyes and see the recompense of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord your dwelling place, the Most High, who is my refuge, no evil shall be allowed to befall you, no plague come near your tent. For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. On their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. You will tread on the lion and the adder, the young lion, the serpent you will trample underfoot. Because he holds fast to me in love, I will deliver him. I will protect him because he knows my name. When he calls to me, I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him and honor him. With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. So the question that I want to ask you today and the question that I want you to consider today is, who do you become in the face of adversity? Who are you when hard times come? And I mean hard times of any type or adversity of any type, whether it's perceived adversity or real adversity, whether it's the death of a family member or a tragedy or somebody announces that they're pregnant and you're not super jazzed. Anything. who do you become? Who are you in those circumstances? As a model for what we're going to talk about, and because he's only three and I can only do this kind of lesson for so long before he starts to become aware that I'm talking about him, I want to use as our example today Ezekiel. Because in his three-year-old self, I see a very distilled and unveiled version of myself. And I think that we can probably all agree that in all children, we see very undistilled and unveiled versions of all of us. Kids are like us, except that they haven't learned yet how to hide their reactions and their feelings. We have the same feelings and reactions and responses to stimuli that kids do. We're just better at covering it up and keeping a poker face because we're older and we can tell that that kind of response isn't socially acceptable anymore. So when Ezekiel is presented with something that he doesn't like or a situation which he views or perceives as adverse, he reacts in pretty much three ways. So I want to go over those three ways, look at those ways as we see them in Psalm 91, and then we'll be done. So when Ezekiel sees something that he perceives is going to cause him pain or is bad news for him or something he doesn't like, the first thing that he does is he goes off the deep end and becomes worst case scenario, Ezekiel. And his imagination just comes up with all the most terrible, horrific outcomes that could possibly happen from that situation, and it causes him to just kind of clam up and not want to be a part of what he's doing. So if I'm holding him and we're about to step into the pool, all he can think about is, Daddy, what if I do sink? Daddy, what if I cannot breathe? Daddy, what if I do fall? Daddy, what if you can't hold me? And everything that could possibly be going wrong is going to go wrong right now. And I think that all of us do this to a degree because there's a very strange illusion of control and comfort that goes along with catastrophizing life, so that we can kind of brace ourselves for what we see as inevitable. A friend of mine called it walking way too far down the road of fear and shaking hands with all of the possible scenarios that live there along the way. But here's the thing. The worst case scenario version of you and me is not just preparing ourselves for what may come. We are sinning. Because our heart is revealed in those difficult moments, and our distrust to God, or distrust in God, is speaking loudly. So if this describes you, and it definitely describes me over the last 33 years, we would do well to completely derail that train of thought of speculation and disaster and simply state to ourselves the truth. When Misty is gone longer than she says that she's going to be gone. If she says, I'm going to go to the grocery store, I'll be back in a couple hours. If 3 hours goes by and she hasn't called, I have already in my mind started to figure out how best to spend the insurance money wisely, how I'm going to take care of the kids, how I'm going to arrange daycare, what am I going to do with no spouse. And that's just her being gone for an extra hour. That's just the way that my mind immediately goes. But look at verse 3 of Psalm 91. He will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and buckler. You will not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in darkness, nor the destruction that wastes at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you. The psalmist here is already going into the worst case scenarios for you and then eliminating them one by one. God is going to take care of you. It is ridiculous for us to think that in our minds we're going to be able to come up with some scenario or some situation that God is not going to be strong enough or big enough or powerful enough to handle. When I'm walking into the pool with Ezekiel and I'm holding him like this, there is no possible way that he is going to sink into the pool and drown or fall, or that I'm not going to be able to control the situation when I'm in 3 feet of water. It's ridiculous for him to fear that. And his fear is not going into the water. His fear is a lack of faith in my ability to handle that situation. And your fear and my fear going into situations in our lives where we don't have control or something is not going the way that we like or it is actually adverse for us, our fear is not a fear that's based on the thing itself, but in our lack of trust in God to be able to sustain us through that, though he has promised to sustain us through that. Our current trouble really may feel like too much, and honestly, your current trouble may be too much for you, but it is never, ever too much for God. I can't maintain my life through the trials that come into my life, but God absolutely can. The second way that Ezekiel reacts when some sort of adversity comes, especially if it's him hurting himself and that hurt is accompanied with any perceived embarrassment, he becomes Ezekiel the minimizer. And he gets very quiet and very stoic. And if he's really embarrassed, he will close his eyes and look off to the left and say, "Achoo! Achoo!" And he'll pretend to sneeze. Because in doing that, if he's closing his eyes and sneezing, then that's why, I mean, that's it just, in his mind, that negates the situation. But I know that he's hurt, and so I go to him, and I pick him up, and I try to comfort him, but he is just, he refuses to acknowledge that he's hurt. And he's very quiet, and if you say, "Hey, buddy, are you all right?" he'll just say, "I'm okay, I'm okay." But I know he's not okay, because I saw what just happened. Now, at first glance, if you don't know Ezekiel very well, and you all know him pretty well, but if you didn't know him pretty well and you saw that happen, you'd say, "Man, what a tough kid. What a resilient kid. What a great example of how kids just bounce back from falling down and getting hurt." But that may be true. I mean, it may be that kids can do that, but in this situation, he may be faking. And I promise you, he's always faking. Acting like everything is fine, like he isn't in pain, and like he isn't embarrassed. And we do this too, and I do this too. Somebody perceives that you're not quite the same as you always are, and they say, hey, are you all right? What's going on? You say, oh, I'm fine. You're clearly not. You're clearly not fine, but to truly feel the pain of difficulty and to be vulnerable with somebody is hard. And asking for help or embracing pain that we're feeling or feeling the depth of the pain that we're feeling seems impossible or maybe at the very least messy, and we just don't want to deal with it. The minimizing version of us hates messes. And this person really lives on the opposite end of the spectrum from worst case scenario you. But their core heart struggle is exactly the same. They want to control their world as much as their dramatic counterpart does. They desperately want to have a life that is wrapped up in a nice little package, but God never once in the Bible promises us a life that is a nice little package with neat bows. People who minimize their pain and minimize their issues that they're going through are trusting in their ability to manage their circumstances and master their emotions, but God is longing for you to break and cry out to him in the darkness. Look at verse 9. "Because you have made the Lord your dwelling place, the Most High, who is my refuge, no evil shall be allowed to befall you, no plague come near your tent." Down in verse 14, "Because he holds fast to me in love, I will deliver him. I will protect him because he knows my name. When he calls to me, I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him and honor him." God wants to rescue you and honor you and answer you, but he can't answer you if you're not calling out. One of the ways that this is most often seen is in prayer. And there are a lot of people in my life who won't ask the congregation for prayers or reveal that they need prayers to the congregation because they just don't want to, I don't want to burden the congregation with what I've got going on, and or I'm too embarrassed. That's a very personal thing, and that's something I just need to deal with, just me and God, and I don't want the church to be a part of that, or I don't need the church to be a part of that. Which is good, because that's what God designed the church for, but we probably know better, right? We know that this situation, we know that we can handle it on our own, just us and God. That's gotten us really a good long ways so far in our lives, and why don't we just keep doing that? You know what was super impressive to me, and I'm super sorry that I'm about to embarrass you, and I forgot to ask you permission ahead of time. Super impressive to me,